Welcome to the Real Turf Techs Podcast, for the technician that wants to get real. Follow along as we talk to industry professionals and address hot topics that we all face. Along the way, we'll learn tips and tricks. I'm your host, Trent Manning. Let's have some fun. Welcome to the Real Turf Techs Podcast, Episode 93. Today, we're talking to Jason Fontana, CTEM, Turf Equipment Manager at Desert Mountain in Scottsdale, Arizona. Desert Mountain is a private club with 126 holes. I said it, 126 holes of golf across seven courses on a property of 9,000 acres. I guess they have big stuff in Arizona too, not just Texas. Jason has 14 techs, two in each shop. Jason has mainly John Deere equipment. Let's talk to Jason. This episode of Real Turf Techs on Golf Course Industries Superintendent Radio Network is presented by Foley Company, a strong supporter of equipment technicians and golf course maintenance departments everywhere. Foley Company offers a proven solution for above and below the turf for turf professionals everywhere. To learn more about Foley Company's line of reel grinders, bed knife grinders, and the Air 2 G2 family of products, or to find a distributor, visit www.foleyco.com. Foley, ready for play. Welcome, Jason, to the Real Turf Techs Podcast. How you doing today?
Doing good, Trent. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's going to be a blast. It always is. It's a lot of fun. Tell us how you got into the turf industry.
Well, I would say I kind of feel like I'm probably have a similar story to a lot of guys in the industry. I started out as a young kid messing around with toys and breaking them, putting them back together, driving my mom crazy. That kind of led me into my grandfather owned an auto shop downtown Phoenix. So all my summers off from school, parents sent me down to Phoenix, spent 3 months with grandma, grandpa, and go to the radiator shop with grandpa. And that just kind of got me into working with my hands, getting dirty, learning what tools are, what they do. And then just grew from there. You know, my first car was a 70 Chevy Nova. So I like to work on my car a lot, try to build it up. And, it just kind of blossomed into that. An opportunity came across one summer and, at the local golf course and jumped into that. And it was immediate. I mean, fell in love with it immediately.
That's awesome. So you started working at a golf course directly in the shop, or did you start out on the crew?
No, I actually started, they were doing an irrigation replacement, really old golf course up in Northern Arizona at Flagstaff. And they were trying to get modern. You know, our old system was all nighttime water guys would drive around at night and set quick couplers at night. And that's how they did it. So they were upgrading to more of a valve and head system. Yeah. One of my buddies worked there previous summers and he just said, hey, you know, we're looking for guys to come help us rip out this old system and dig holes and trenches and that kind of stuff. And hopped into that and started, you know, day one in the bunkers, hand raking bunkers, and just slowly worked my way up out of that. And once I got into the shop, you know, and got to mess around with reels and things like that, it was off to the races after that.
That's awesome.
A little intimidating at first, you know, something so specialty, you know, a little different from working on just small block Chevys and stuff. But no, man, it came naturally. Loved it immediately.
That's awesome. No, great story for sure. Do you relief grind?
Every time.
Every time. All right. Always. I love it.
We try not to let our land widths get any closer than halfway. You know, if it's halfway, that's too far, in my opinion. So that way we're not doing such a heavy relief grind either, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Relief. But a lot easier. Absolutely. We are, we're full blown relief grinders here.
Okay. Very nice. And have you always, I guess, relief ground?
No. You know, in the early days, I didn't know any better. And the first course was kind of a low budget course. So they actually had a backlapping machine and backlapping compound, which is something I haven't seen or touched in years, but it was pretty popular in those days. And I mean, they just, you know, spin grind, everything was full thickness blades,
Mm-hmm.
Maximum robbing of horsepower, heat build of all the stuff you don't want to do.
Right.
But no, it wasn't until I started with True Golf. I worked at a course and they sent me to a grinding seminar every year, a local seminar. The local John Deere guys would do a grinding seminar, and it was through Foley, and it really opened my eyes to the science of it, you know.
Oh yeah.
Why we're backed up by data and everything. And so once we saw that, it was like, okay, that was kind of a no brainer after that.
Just mm-hmm.
wasn't lucky enough to learn in all of, you know, the detailed way at the beginning with relief. It was mostly just spin grinding.
Well, I think a lot of us can relate to that. And I mean, even me, when I first started, we didn't even have a bed knife grind. And I've told this story, right. You know, a bunch of times. And yeah, that's all we could do was lap. You put a new bed knife on and lap it until that bed knife's done. You throw another one on there.
Right, it's right.
Crazy.
I remember our one of our first mechanics, he had the old, you know, you would number each blade. And it wasn't even a spin grinder. It was just a relief grinder. But you would just do one blade at a time, start on one, go through all of them, then start on two on the next one around. Until you relief that thing all the way down where there was no land. You know,
right.
They'd send that thing out and it'd get dinged up immediately. And, you know, you just learn what works well and what gets you stuck.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I got a 1988 Toro pull gang unit. And in the operator's manual, it tells you to relief grind and, you know, with no land. And then you're supposed to lap it to establish the land.
The land. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't
know. That's old school right there, man.
That's super old school. Yeah. Old school for sure. Yeah. I don't do that, but that's what it says in the operator's manual.
1988, huh?
Yep. 1988. And she's still running. And honestly, it's one of my favorite pieces of equipment because I'll go through it in the wintertime. I'll grind the reels, check all the bearings, all that stuff. And it'll run all summer, and all we got to do is adjust reel to bed knife. Occasionally, we'll replace a roller or something like that.
Right. And you pull that around on your roughs?
Yeah. So that's our rough mower. And then we have one 3100 that, you know, kind of catches the cleanup.
Gotcha.
So we're 100% reels on our rough. And I know a lot of people that's went rotary, but I'm not there yet.
I'm hanging on. Operate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can destroy some stuff and destroy some cutting units, too, with us hanging out there.
I think I scarred every other tree that we had at our golf course in Washington with one of those. Just getting too close. And
yeah, y'all, well, it was John Borso. He said, it's amazing what an operator will do to try to get one piece of grass.
Oh, yeah.
One blade of grass.
How much time you waste? You miss it and come swing back around just to try to get it. And
yeah. Yeah.
That's nothing good. Like being thorough.
That's it. Tell us something you fabricated lately.
Me personally, the last thing I fabricated is pretty small, but we are flipping leases and we have some GPS equipment on property now, particularly some of our 200-gallon sprayers are GPS operated.
Mm-hmm.
So the last thing I actually welded up and fabbed up was a stand to take up on one of these mountains for the transmitter antenna. Nothing fancy, but just like some 2x2 posts with a stand on, you know, flat plate on top with a cover, and then put a cabinet in it so that, you know, keep it out of the weather, and then ran some steel conduit because we get a lot of pack rats and stuff in there. They eat jacketing off wiring and they just tear everything up. So it was a cool little project, even though it was halfway up a mountain, but it's good to get out there.
You said pack rat, and here in the South, we don't have pack rats. And, you know, I'd heard the term pack rat, you know, my whole life, and referring to people that are probably hoarders being pack rats or whatever.
Same deal.
But I was at my friend's house in Kansas, and I opened one of our kitchen drawers, and there's all these pods in there from, and I'm not sure what tree it came from, but
like
these pods were, yeah, they were seed pods and maybe 6 inches long. And the drawer is packed full of them. And I mean, she's like really clean too. So I'm really puzzled. I'm like, is she saving these seed pods for something? So I said, hey, come here. What's this in this drawer? And she, you know, so she immediately starts freaking out. What's like, oh my God, what is that? Sure enough, it's a bag rat.
They wreak havoc, man. We get equipment that we park out of the way, you know, that doesn't get used very often, like some fleet vehicles. And, you know, you come around to them in the springtime or whatever to pull them out and use them and find it. You know, they're in the hood. They've made a house in there. They've chewed, you know, halfway through a bundle of wire harness. That's crazy. Just destructive animals.
Yeah, that's nuts.
So you really got to go out of your way to keep them out. So I basically welded them out, you know, keep them out.
Okay. Yep.
But, yeah, that was the last thing I personally made myself.
What's your favorite tool?
See, I got to go basic and say the trusty hammer.
Okay. All right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, old school hammer, you know how many times you need a little hammer? I mean, new style, I'd say probably my Fluke multimeter, but can't tell you how many times a hammer, you know, you just need a hammer.
What's your favorite hammer?
I just use an old S-wing framing hammer, steel shaft, for probably 20 years.
Yeah. I didn't know. Yeah. If you're snap-on ball peen or.
No, nothing like that. I got a couple ball peens in the drawer. You know, you need those, but I usually go for my straight claw framing hammer. Always have. I don't know why.
I love it, man. It's good stuff. What do you do to relax or find your balance?
Pretty much anything outside, you know. Be it fishing, hunting, anything I can do outside. My wife and I like to go off-roading out in the desert and look for old abandoned gold mines and do some prospecting and things like that. And dog out on the weekend and do that. That's usually been what we've been doing lately because it's nice out in the desert still. It's not hot yet.
Okay, that's awesome. So can you kind of do that all winter long?
What's that, prospecting and all that?
Well, I mean, yeah, is the weather decent in your area the winter?
It's great. Okay. I mean, we'll get into some cold spells. I mean, cold for us is, you know, you get into the 30s, get some frost. We never really get a hard, it's pretty rare we get a hard freeze. Okay. So, I mean, you start out a morning in the upper 30s, sun comes out, you know, it's in the 50s in no time.
Yeah.
So it's a little cool to our standards, but ultimately it's nice. You know, we're going to be complaining in a few months about it being too hot. So. Take it while we can.
Yeah, any day that's mid to high 50s and the sun's out, that's beautiful weather for getting outside doing stuff. Pretty good. Yeah.
We were touching the low 70s for a few days, but it's just been every 3 days we get a rainstorm come through, and a couple times it snowed out here, and you know, it's not unusual, but when it doesn't usually stick. It'll snow and maybe dust the desert a little bit, but. This last one, actually, everything was white, like 2 inches of snow.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That's a good snowfall then.
Yeah. Expecting that tomorrow night again. So
awesome.
Weird.
What's the strangest thing you've seen at the golf course?
Like in my career, man, I've seen some crazy stuff. Some of the vandalism I've seen, you know, you come into work. I mean, I can remember a time coming into work and doing the front, and I come around the back, and there's a couch in one of the bunkers in the fairway, like just a full blown, like I don't know what they did in there all night, but I mean, they had beer bottles, and you know, I'm sure you've seen your share of some interesting vandalism too.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Some interesting wildlife kills, you know, out in the desert. We've found half buried deer. Like we've seen mountain lions kind of hide their kills. Come back later, but that was pretty crazy to come and see a hollowed out full grown deer somewhere halfway buried in a bunker. That was pretty crazy.
No, that's nuts. Is mountain lion really common there? I guess
actually, yeah. I know Arizona Game and Fish has 3 known cats that are tagged out here in this area in these mountains. Mm. And if you get on YouTube, there's actually a cool video of one of them on the 18th green of the Chiricahua course. Some members were shooting videos. They were up having drinks in the patio. And they shot video of him. And he was just playing around with the flag stick, you know, swatting around at the flag and got his claw stuck in it and pulled the pin out. And It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of our local resident cats from Desert Mountain.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah, so this afternoon I was talking to my director of agronomy, and I told him that I was interviewing you and where you worked, and he couldn't remember. I think it was like early 90s he was at your club. And I think maybe GCSA was having their event somewhere around there. And anyway, he came out to play. And, you know, I don't know who invited him or whatever. But he said from the entrance, it's a pretty long drive up to the clubhouse.
Yes.
It was. And I don't know what course it was he played. But he said that they got your name at the gate. And by the time you got to the clubhouse, they had all your stuff ready.
Really?
Yeah. And cool. I mean, I don't know if y'all still do that or not, but
I don't know. I mean, in those days, it would have been, you know, we're up to 7 golf courses now, and they built them. I think they started in 86 with Renegade, and they went all the way into the early 2000s for the 6 big courses. And then they just added a 7th course, par 3. I think they finished that 3 years ago.
Wow.
And it's all on a 9,000 acre property. So, I mean, depending on what part of the mountain you go to, you pull in the gate, and it might be a 30-minute drive before you get to your actual course.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I mean, it's expensive.
I want to say he was saying there was only 3 courses, like
yeah,
when he came out of there.
Renegade, Cochise, and Geronimo, those were the first 3. Renegade was yeah. first.
Okay. No, that's a cool story. If it still happens, that's
yeah. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they went to that level. It wouldn't mm-hmm. surprise me.
What's one of your pet peeves around the shop?
Oh, let's start. I'd say probably starting too many projects, you know, too many irons in the fire. You know, we all get caught up in the moment and try to do as much as we can, be as productive as we can. But a lot of times I think we bite off more than we can chew, and it's easy to let something slip by or miss something, and you don't realize it until, you know, when it's crunch time or you find out the hard way. So we try to really focus on starting something, finishing it, and, you know, getting it done.
Yeah, yeah.
And not having to do it again.
No, that's a really, really good thing. How many technicians do you have that work for you?
So I have 14 total, 2 in each shop.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome.
It's a great team. Great team. They're autopilot, man. You know, they were already an autopilot when I got here. And they pretty much stay busy on their own. You know, we have our meetings and all that stuff, but I don't have to line them out for the day or anything like that. They're real, they're real efficient on their own.
No, that's awesome. Good stuff.
Yeah. With 2 in each shop, I mean, I don't want to say redundant, but you know, they cross over each other and make sure that things don't get missed. There's a lot of overlap.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's good. And having some redundancy is a great thing.
Yeah.
I need somebody to check behind me all the time, because I'm constantly forgetting this or that, or
tell me
I
about
do that.
It, tell me yeah. about it.
Just yeah, like you're saying, in the heat of the moment, and when everything's going 100 miles an hour, is all you can do to keep up.
It's
with
easy
what you're
to drop
on.
Some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Do you have a mentor in the industry?
So, you know, Trey, I wouldn't say that, and I hate to say that. I can't say that I actually have one guy that I can think of my whole career that I really look back to. The ones that stand out are really my high-level DOAs that I work for, you know, like my director right now, Todd. She's awesome. I've worked for Sean Emerson. He was great to work for. And then some of the other guys in the Northwest. She's the directors that really... You know, I'm not to say some directors, I feel like it's hard to approach, you know, maybe an intimidation thing when you're lower level to how approachable your directors are. But these guys that I've worked for over the years have always been really approachable, and you feel like they care about what you're doing and your career is headed. And the little things that they say stick, you know, like 100% commit to what you're doing. Don't second guess yourself. Things along that line, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, that's some really good, yeah, really good advice. And I mean, it's
yeah, a lot of great people out there that I've worked with.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I've had a bunch of people say that, you know, I don't have one mentor. I got 100 mentors.
Maybe. Yeah. And that's kind of how I feel, you know, it just depends on where you're at and what you're going through. But, you know, some of them I worked for have exposed me to the agronomy side. You know, I went through turf school and wanted to be a superintendent because I looked up to some of those guys. It was like, you know, maybe that's what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I love doing that too, but I still like to, I still, my heart's in the shop.
Yeah, yeah, yep. No, I'm with you there. And I've thought the same thing about, you know, should I pursue that? But I don't know. I really like working in the shop. And I'm really glad I don't have to deal with membership, too.
Oh, man.
And play all the top politics that these
guys
have to play.
Those are the two biggest things you said right there, is the politics of it and then members. You know, there's always the members that will have your back no matter what. And then there's the few that can't, no matter what you do, you can't, they're hard to get on board with what you're doing, no matter how hard you try. But it's the ones in the middle that matter, you know, the 80% in the middle.
Well, right. And that's probably what makes the director of agronomy keep doing it, is those 80 in the middle. It's not the ones on the end.
Not the 10 that always complain.
Right. What would be your dream job or opportunity?
Oh, man, if I could have a dream job, it would be, I'd be up in the mountains. I mean, my heart and soul's in the mountains. If I could have a cabin in the woods, nice little golf course, work seasonal, you know, and just be out, because I'm an outdoors guy, so I'd already be there.
You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I hear
Sounds simple, man, but it's just, I don't know what it is about the woods, but that would.
I agree with you. I mean, there's definitely something to being outdoors in the woods.
Just tired of the city, man. City life gets old. There's too many people, and you can't do anything without, you know, something going on. Yeah.
Yeah, I had that conversation. The neighborhood I lived in, I built a playhouse for my daughters, and, you know, they were whatever. I don't know, one and four or something like that. You know, I mean, they're really small at the time, and it wasn't, you know, nothing fancy, painted the same color as our house. And I put cedar shake shingles on it.
Nice.
Mainly because my neighbor had some cedar shake shingles and I thought, this will look cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, I put those on there. Yeah. And HOA's up and, you know, in an uproar. Can you paint these black?
There
I'm like,
go.
No, I'm not painting cedar shakes black. I'm sorry.
HOA, man. No sin.
But, yeah, they'll turn. So, yeah, and you know, I grew up in the country back then. It's not so much now, and I can definitely relate to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Being outdoors, I was outside every day as a kid.
Yeah, that's where I grew up too. Was up north in the woods. The career brought me back down to the desert, but you know, like I said, that's where my heart and soul is back up in the woods. And if I can get a job where, you know, something that would satisfy and be up in that kind of environment, man, I'm in.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to keep my eye out for you. I'm sure there's something coming down the line.
I appreciate that. You let me know.
Yeah. What technician would you like to work with for a day?
That's a great question. I've never really given that any thought. I mean, there's so many guys in the industry. I'd say probably the ones that really stand out. I mean, I know Stephen Tucker's done a lot for the industry, but I really got to chat with John Patterson a little bit at the show.
Oh,
and
nice.
I've known of John Patterson for a long time. I've just never formally met the gentleman. He just sounds like a really cool guy. And the place he works at, you know, at Atlanta is something to behold as well. And I think it'd be cool to just hang out with him for a day.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, if you ever want to come to Atlanta, you let me know and we'll set up a shop tour and we'll go see John and see some other people. And
that would be awesome. Yeah,
we were
awesome.
Lucky enough when Chad Braun came down and spoke at our equipment manager seminar here in Georgia back in January. And he luckily was able to stay the next day. So we ran over to John's and we went by Atlanta Country Club, which is where Corey Phillips is at. You might have run into him at show. He's got a nice facility there too. But we had so much fun. Just seeing, you know, different people shop, and you walk around, you see all their equipment, and you're like, oh, what are you using this for?
That's so great cool idea. About it, too. You know, we all, there's a million ways to skin a cat, you know what I mean? We
mm-hmm.
our product, I think, is generally the same, but the differences in how different guys get to that is what blows me away. You think you kind of have a grip on everything, and then you go to another place and see people doing things completely different, but in an awesome way that results in great product. And it's like, no, I'm like a sponge, man. I'll learn. I'll take that up all day long. Learn from
Well, I mean, exactly like you said, there's more than one way to skin a cat. We're all trying to do the same thing. We all do it a little bit different. And if you collectively take 10 people's processes and put them together, you can come up with something really, really good that works. That's for right. you.
Totally agree.
So, yeah, for sure. So, yes, definitely John Patterson would be a great one to spend the day with. And he's open to that, too. I know Jerry Kara, he came up not this past winter, the winter before, and spent a couple days with John at his shop in the wintertime. And, I mean, it's so nice to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And pick somebody like that's brain for a couple days that's been doing it forever and has a really good program over there.
Yeah,
and they're fortunate.
He's smart too, you know. I mean, when we tried out some of these brackets that he engineered for QA5s, that, man, there's no looking back. Like, he needs to mass produce those, and it's like,
that's
wow.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you
our
got
guys
some?
Struggle with those eccentrics on these SIP grinders, and that's like the solution right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, hands down. And I mean, no matter what kind of grinder you got, that is a pain to try.
It is. And you're right. It doesn't matter the grinder. I mean, even anybody that touches one of those eccentrics, I'm sure has grumbled at it.
Yeah. I'm still trying to find a socket that I can get a 7/8 to fit through. You know, you need a grinder, socket that's, right.
You got to grind into a low profile wrench.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know what the engineer, well, actually, when was this? Probably like 2011, me and Corey Phillips, we went to the John Deere training school up
in Raleigh.
In Raleigh. And one night we went out and was having dinner with the engineers. And me and Corey both asked this engineer, what are you thinking on this?
Did you hammer him?
Yeah, we hammered him. Like, this is an awful design.
I remember they gave us that opportunity at the end of the factory training. I went to that as well. And like the last day was Q&A with the engineers, and it was what everyone was waiting for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's Adam.
What do you know now you wish you'd known on day one?
Well, that's a tough question, too. Wish I'd known that I would come this far, you know? I never would have dreamed that I'd be even halfway to this level, you know? Mm-hmm. You think back to day one of, you know, sticking a probe in the ground, looking for irrigation pipe, trying to rip out old pipe and hand raking bunkers to, you know, managing 14 guys and, you know, the huge John Deere lease and 5 shops. And it's, yeah, never would have dreamed it, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very humbled.
You might be having the dream job already. You already got some people's dream job, probably. Having a facility like that.
It's great. I mean, it's never a dull moment, you know? I mean, it has its challenges, but at the end of it all, it's, you know, if I didn't have the team I had, and I probably wouldn't be here.
Well, right. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
You know, they really carry it, and it's just a cool place to be around and cool people to be around, and it's great.
That's awesome.
It's huge.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I'll just go ahead and warn you, I'm inviting myself next year.
Doors always open. And that's kind of what I've talked to my, you know, I don't know what plans the show will have, but I know there's going to be some gentlemen in town that might want to step out, and ladies too. Come out, check out the mountain.
Oh yeah.
Show you all the shops.
Definitely on my list for sure.
Awesome.
Get ready for tips and tricks. You got any tips or tricks you want to share with us?
Tips and tricks? Not really, man. I mean, not really.
Okay. Just keep your head down. Stay busy.
Yeah. Yeah. Just commit to what you're doing and 100% every time.
That's something to live by.
I wouldn't
by,
call that a tip sure. or a trick, but.
Well, I think it's good advice. How about that?
That's right.
That's really good advice. Well, let's talk about getting a shop OSHA-ified.
Big John. So like I said, this shop and the other four as well are, they're outfitted generally like you would see a standard shop. But goals I have, I'm going to start with painting floors, epoxying floors, creating safety lanes, no-go areas like welding areas will be painted a different color. Some of the things I notice, and this comes from time I worked in a fabrication shop that was huge, and they were very OSHA-oriented to where, something as simple as he's looking for a fire extinguisher, you'd see a red stripe on the wall so you could see it from a distance and know right where to go versus, something happens, you're scrambling around and you can't find her. It's not where it was, or somebody, moved it or whatever, high visibility, things like that to help in a situation. Hose reels from the ceiling. So all our air hoses will hang from a reel through the ceiling for drop down. There won't be anything across the ground, anti-slip on the stairs. As much as I can get off the floor, the better.
Right.
But that's the big start right now. This is a 7,000 square foot shop. So I got to sub that out to have an epoxied, and then we'll do lanes. What else? Tag in, tag out. That was never in here. We implemented that. Even though we have a facilities department and we usually can call them out and have them come fix stuff, there's times when we got to do it ourselves. And, just everything is just safety oriented. I don't want anybody to work on anything without some sort of a layer of safety. That's where the tag in, tag out came in. Some as simple as a light switch, you got to kill power to that circuit or whatever.
Right. Do you have any, what are you doing on the epoxy floor? Any certain brand or prep?
So I've used a lot over the years. We've tried the cheap stuff, the Rust-Oleum. To me, that's a homeowner garage coating, not a high impact shop like this. So I've really been looking for something heavy duty. In the past, I use a product through Lawson. I don't remember the name of it, but it was a two-part gray epoxy. It worked real nice. It was pretty strong, had a real nice gloss. But I have found a product called Armor Epoxy on the internet. It's not cheap, but this stuff builds up to like 24 mils thick. It's used in aircraft hangars, stuff with high, heavy traffic. I've tried it in two of our smaller shops just around the grind area. And it doesn't chip off. It doesn't. It looks like it did when we installed it 8 months ago.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm hoping to use that here. It's not it's not cheap, but I feel like in this industry, you get what you pay for more often than not.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I've used the Sherwin-Williams products, the HS1000 or whatever it was.
Oh, what are your thoughts on
that? Well, it's a two-part epoxy, and it looks beautiful. Right after it goes down, and mine's actually been down 10 years and it looks pretty rough though.
Does it?
That's one thing I do not like about it is it seems to chip pretty easy.
Right.
And I think I did a fair job on the prep. We done it all in the house and it is a pain and I wish I could sub that stuff out. I don't know how thick you're allowed to put it down, but maybe, if you had it, 10 mils thick or something, maybe it doesn't chip as bad. I'm not sure. But all in all, it's held up pretty good, but I would say every 3 years, it probably needs to be done to keep it looking sharp.
Right. And that's the other thing I noticed too, was a lot of products tend to chip no matter how much prep you put into roughing up the surface and acid etching and all that. I still feel like, especially the box store stuff, like the Rust-Oleums and stuff, they're just not made for the kind of work that we do, the high impact
and
the harsh chemicals and stuff. I'm hoping this will be the solution. It comes with a pretty hard warranty and, it's like any other two part, you know, it takes 3-4 days to fully cure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I hope to put that down on this job here in the next couple months.
Okay. Awesome. Done. Yeah. We'll keep us posted for sure.
For sure.
How that stuff's holding up. If not, I'll find out.
Let's bring that hammer.
February.
Bring that hammer. We'll swing a hammer.
That's right. That's good. Good stuff. So what else are you doing OSHA wise on getting this, all your shops? I mean, so let's back up just a second. You are a certified turf equipment manager. So you have went through the CTEM process and got certified. So your facilities were already pretty squared away.
Yeah, they're pretty safe. I mean, I think, you know, I don't want to say it's, you know, for me personally, but, you know, if I can really fancy this up instead of just basic, you know, with not just, like I said, the floor, but like things on the wall, organized on the wall, get everything up off the ground, hang what I can, just really will reduce, even if guys aren't paying attention, you know, mm-hmm. it'll reduce accidents and things, but just from stuff laying around. Big one I see is the air hoses and extension cords dragged around. So hanging those will be the big thing. Fuel, we have our fuel tanks, so I want to get I'm not required to have everybody, but I'd like to get all of my guys certified for underground storage tank for ABC. That way it's not just me. There's enough overlap and coverage for fuel. See anything fuel related? What am I missing? I mean, fire suppression, I'd say.
Are y'all required to have fire suppression in your facility?
As far as legally, I don't know the square footage, but yes, there's a certain square footage. And we do have a sprinkler system, but like I was alluding to earlier with the fire extinguishers, they're in here, but I don't know that there's enough, you know, so I want to add some more, mm-hmm. spread them out so people don't have to go so far if there's an accident or if they need one.
Yeah, yeah. When I was going through the CTEM process, I wanted to make sure of that too. So I called out our fire extinguisher guy, the guy that comes in, or the company that services them every year. And I was pumping him for information, like, how many of these do I need per square foot? And he's like, I don't think it works that way.
It doesn't.
I'm like, okay.
I kind of got the similar answer from our facilities department because they handle all that. And I was like, hey, I want to add some fire extinguishers. I don't know if there's enough. And they're like, kind of the similar thing, like, well, I don't know that there's a formula that you follow. And it's like, well, I'm staying here and there's oil barrels and stuff right here. And there's a fire extinguisher over there, but I'd like one to be right here as well,
mm-hmm.
right next to everything.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. They're not going to count off if you got too many. Right. Yeah. Don't have to worry about hearing that. Didn't you have something really cool for your fuel? The fuel dispensing, like a keypad?
Oh, we use a VST. So VST is all of our pumps, they're all, each employee has a code. Mm-hmm. And that code will connect them to their home golf course that they work at. So when they enter in a code, it has the golf course they're at, the vehicle they're using, and then what pump they use. So basically a computer tracks every gallon to what machine and by what employee at what golf course.
Okay. Awesome.
So it really helps when ADHQ comes around and wants, you know, total fuel output. It's, you know, 30 seconds on their app and they can generate a report for however they want. It's way handy versus following a clipboard and not accounting for who forgot to record their gas for the day or whatever, you know.
Well, and like,
cannot get gasoline without having to access the pump.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. There's no way for them to get gas or to get diesel or whatever without
access denied, that panel.
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool stuff.
It is. And I mean, this golf course, we're in multiple layers of security. You know, you got to go through security gate and then another gate and another gate before you finally get in here. But, you know, so theft isn't really an issue here. But I worked at other places where, you know, your gas kind of disappears on its own, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep, for sure.
So this is nice to be able to track every gallon.
Yeah, I don't, we had a guy, he hadn't been there long, like, you know, a week or two. And on a Saturday, the manager sees him over filling his car up. And it's like, dude, what are you doing? Oh, I thought we could get gas. It's like, what? what are you thinking here?
Doesn't work that way, man. No, I worked at a place where that happened before. There was a car. It was my first day on the job. And there was a Honda or something at the gas. And I didn't make a big deal, but I just walked over to him and was like, can I help you? And he's like, yeah, I'm the general manager. Nice to meet you. Oh, yeah.
Nice. All right. Okay. Yep. Yep. Have a good day. Yeah, exactly.
But, right. You know, watch those fuel pumps like a hawk.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure. Well, you got anything else you want to share with us?
No, I mean, it's like I said, I hope you guys can make some time and come out if you're down here for the show next year.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. You're going to get, you're going to get bombarded.
I can't wait, man. Can't
yeah,
wait.
No, it's going to be, it'll be a lot of fun for sure. Well, let's do some rapid fire questions.
Go, man.
What's your favorite movie?
The Godfather.
Oh, classic. What would be your last meal?
Oh, tomahawk steak.
All right. How thick is a tomahawk steak?
So I'd say inch and a half, you know.
Okay.
Inch and a half is good. Nice two-pounder.
I saw a show over the weekend. And they were cooking a tomahawk steak, and I thought, man, that looks so.
That's a big piece of meat, man.
What are you most proud of?
My career.
Awesome. So good. So good. I love it, man. Well, tell the listeners how they could get a hold of you. You on Twitter?
Well, what's that? I'm actually not on any social media. I'm not a
social media. No social media.
I'll probably warm up to that eventually. Starting with Twitter, but you know, I answer emails all day long. jfontana@desertmt.com.
Very good. There.
What's that?
That's very good. Yep. Email address is,
yeah, blow it up, man. I check it on the hour every hour. So
that's good.
Me up with any questions or anything you want to talk about, or if you're going to be in the area and you want to come check the place out, I'm happy to show anybody around.
I appreciate that. Well, thank you so much, Jason. This has been a blast as always. And
thank you, Brad. It was awesome. Yeah.
Being here.
Love what you're doing, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Real Turf Techs podcast. I hope you learned something today. Don't forget to subscribe. If you have any topics you would like to discuss or you'd like to be a guest, find us on Twitter @RealTurfTechs. See you. Bye.